All three teams at the top of the National League East win their games on Tuesday. Can the Philadelphia Phillies hold on and keep the Braves and Mets from taking over? We'll talk about that and more on today's First Pitch. Yes, welcome on into First Pitch for Wednesday, August 28th. I'm Lindsey Crosby with Athlon Sports and Braves Today. He's Christian Round, National MLB writer. And we're talking about very National League East heavy show today. We didn't give them a lot of love yesterday. But as we head into some pivotal series over the weekend, they are handling business in their current matchups right now. We'll start with the Philadelphia Phillies taking on the Houston Astros. They go 5-0 victory over the Astros. We talked about the Aaron Nola versus Justin Verlander matchup. Nola absolutely gets the best of that. There are 7 scoreless innings, 4 hits, 1 4 hits, 6 strikeouts to 1 walk. Justin Verlander, flip side of that, 5 innings pitched, 7 hits, 4 runs, 1 walk to only 3 strikeouts. You look at Wednesday's matchup, Taijuan Walker versus Spencer Arrighetti. Not a great pitching matchup for Philly. Taijuan Walker has been dreadful this season, and he's still owed a bunch of money as well. But Christian, I think twofold question here. One, can Philly find a way to get the sweep of Houston? You know, they walked him off in game one. They easily shut him down in game two. Can they find a way to get the sweep? And then two, is there... are they ready to finally win a series against the Braves starting on Thursday?
Man, I'll tell you what, if they sweep Houston, they're coming in hot. And I know the Braves are looking good too. We're going to talk about them in just a little bit. But I'm intrigued to see what's going to happen. I think Aaron Nola was fantastic last night. It's probably his second best start of the entire season other than the complete game. So give me that all day. But I think it does come down to what happens with Walker, though. Mm-hmm. It comes down to what happens with Walker. I saw a really funny tweet that came out yesterday talking about the matchup between Arrighetti and Walker. And they said it's spaghetti versus meatballs because Walker is having a really tough time on the mound this year. So hopefully they can get it figured out. And, you know, for the sake of the Phillies, they need to get that figured out because I thought his last start was going to be his last chance to get it figured out. And he didn't look good on that one. I think he only lasted 3 innings, if I remember. It wasn't very much. So,
3 innings against the Royals, 6 runs on 8 hits. Yeah.
Right. The fact they're giving him another round is interesting to me. It's not like they don't have other options they can go to, especially since Ranger Suarez is back. So I feel like now that Ranger Suarez is officially back, like this is the final time through the rotation where Suarez was just back a few days ago. If Walker does not perform, I think that we finally see a replacement for him after this game today.
Yeah. So kind of for context there, Taijuan Walker, 13 starts this year, 3-5 with a 6.26 ERA, only has 53 strikeouts, 64 2/3 innings. And that's kind of where his strikeout rate has been in the last couple seasons. His last year with the Mets in 2022, last year with Philly, where he had an ERA just under 4.5. He's been in that 7 and change per 9 inning strikeout rate, but his walks have gone up to almost 4 walks per 9 innings. So he's not striking out very many. He's walking a ton. He's already given up 17 homers in those 64 2/3 innings. It is just an absurd amount. For context, he had 20 homers last year in 172 innings. So definitely dealing with long ball issues. Like you said, there are other options here for Philly. This feels like it's the last chance, but if they can somehow win that start, and I think it's going to end up being some of it's the big three we've talked about have been a little bit. They got right against Kansas City. They've performed in this series, but like Nick Castellanos hit a 3-run home run last night. A guy that, to his credit, he's always been one of those like see ball, hit ball kind of guys, right? He's just been a go up there, crush a baseball. And with Philly getting this very, specific pitching plan by opposing teams of we're not going to throw him fastballs. We're going to give him off speed. We're going to give him breaking. We're going to selectively use fastballs. He's been, I feel like, much better at actually going up to the plate with an idea and a plan of what to do. And you're starting to see things like that. You're starting to see where that's paying off a little bit. The last month, Nick Castellanos is batting 280 with, the last 2 months, 280. It's something where they needed this depth. And without things like this, they didn't have a shot in any game where those big three didn't combine for multiple hits and probably a homer. So feels like they're hot headed into the Braves series. We'll see what happens in the series finale. Again, Taijuan Walker versus Spencer Arrigetti. We'll see how that goes. 4:05 Eastern. We'll have an idea. Obviously, that'll be part of, I think there's 4 or 5 different day games spread across different time zones today. That's one of them. And probably the second best matchup today.
Walker can't give up any home runs today. After the spaghetti and meatballs thing, it just can't happen. It can't happen, because if it does, I think
have some pride, man.
At least from me, because I'm gonna like constantly throw out the Italian meme if he lets up a home run. Castellanos, though, real quick before we move on, I agree with you 100%. We are finally seeing, dare I say, Lindsay, some consistency from him. Like, I feel like that is a word that we haven't been able to use much of with Nick Castellanos, and I think we can finally use that right now. And this Philadelphia Phillies team as a whole, in the last 2 weeks, they are the fifth best team in baseball with a 779 OPS. They're finally getting back up there as a whole team. So not only just those big three, as we mentioned, Ed Castellanos, ask the rest of the group in there. That's why I think this team's getting hot, and that's why I think this series coming up against the Braves is going to be absolutely huge.
Speaking of the Braves, they win their second game in a row against the Minnesota Twins. They've officially won the series. They won 10-6 in that rain delay affected game on Monday. They win last night in extras 8-6. Really interesting kind of how this happened. Atlanta puts up 4 runs rather early, has a lead in the 7th. You see the Twins score 3 in the 7th, 1 in the 8th to tie it. It goes into extras. Atlanta goes 4 runs in the 10th inning, gives up 2 to the Twins, but gets out of there with the victory. I'm not sure. I think the question here is, are we finally seeing some of that Braves offense that we were expecting? Is that a bigger deal, or are the struggles of the non-big two in the bullpen of Raisel Iglesias and Joe Jimenez, is that the bigger story to take away from yesterday's game?
Can it be a little bit of both? I think, like, initially, that's what I want to say. First and foremost, I think the most important part is the offense, because that has been such an issue all year long for the Braves. It hasn't been an issue like where it has been the worst in baseball, but it's been dang near close for some points in time. They have started to figure it out. And now that you're finally seeing that, they're winning baseball games. It doesn't hurt whatsoever, though, that their bullpen is finally starting to be, dare I say again, I think I used this word already today, Lindsay, consistent. We're starting to see some consistency at the end of that bullpen. And, I mean, Iglesias has been incredible. The streak might have ended of him having consecutive outs, but he's still absolutely incredible. And I like what the offense is doing, though. I think I'd have to pick that one, but there's no doubt in my mind that both of them are what's helping them get back in this race and succeed. They are going to have to show it in this series against the Phillies. I said at the beginning of last week that the Phillies-Braves series, that 3-game series, was going to be the most important race. Well, now we're going into the most important race of the season between the Phillies and Braves when they play, because of how the race is tightened up. And we're going to be in for some fun. This is going to be a hell of a weekend for baseball. I am super excited.
This absolutely is. And it's coming at the same time as the first week of college football, the first full week of college football, obviously. So that'll be a little fun. But no, like, looking at that Braves offense, right? 24 hits, 18 runs in the first 2 games. 10 extra base hits, 3 homers, 7 doubles. And you're seeing, one, I think, is you're seeing consistency from some players like Matt Olson, right? Matt Olson, yeah, multiple hits in these games. So that's a big deal, because he's been the one constant in the lineup that they haven't gotten performance from, right? They haven't had any other constants in the lineup except for Marcell Ozuna and Matt Olson, because Ronald Acuña Jr. is out. Austin Riley's now out. Ozzie Albies has been out multiple times this year. Michael Harris missed time. Virtually everybody missed time except for these two. And Ozuna was hitting and Olson was not. So if Olson's able to get going, he had four hard hit balls over 100 miles an hour on in Monday's game, and then multiple hits last night. If he's able to get going, you feel good about the ability to go into Philly. All you have to do to have the tiebreaker is to win one, right? Because Atlanta's up in the season series. If you win one, you will have officially won the season series. Obviously, they need to win probably three of the four to close ground on Philly, especially right. with Philly keeps winning against Houston. But you win one, you get the season tiebreaker. You just have to catch them first for that to matter. But they need to win two or three. They need to be hot. And I feel like this team, it's still coming in spurts, right? You had that big inning early. After you had two innings in the first, or two runs in the second, two runs in the fifth. You didn't score again until the 10th. You scored four there. But when they're coming in spurts. And we saw the last, I felt like 2 weeks, everything was three runs, two runs, three runs, maybe four runs, three runs. They weren't being able to put up those high run totals. And so if your pitching staff stumbled a little bit, they were in trouble. Now, the bullpen stumbled a little bit. I wrote a whole thing in the takeaways at Braves Today. Of Jesse Chavez and Luke Jackson just being dreadful. Last 14 innings for Jesse Chavez, 8.16 ERA, 21 hits, 9 walks, whip of over 2. So not good. Luke Jackson, since he joined the team at the trade deadline, 9 innings pitched, 8 earned runs, 9 actual runs, 13 hits, 4 walks. Like, neither one of those guys has been good. And you saw this come up last night, right? Atlanta ended up having to replace Jesse Chavez with Joe Jimenez in the 7th. And then they asked Jimenez to come back out for the 8th. Jimenez got in a little bit of trouble in the 8th. They put in Raisel Iglesias in the 8th, asked him to get the out there and then turn around and come back for the 9th. And you're seeing not having a trustworthy back end of the bullpen, what that can do. You should not have, in a game you were leading 4-0, you should not have had to scramble to get your setup man up in the 7th inning. Yet you did. And so Atlanta's going to have to do something. Obviously, the roster's expanded just a couple of days. You can call up one additional pitcher. I imagine at this point, it's probably a reliever. I'd imagine it's Daisybel Hernandez. They may want to go with a starter. I don't know. But it feels like one of those two guys, Luke Jackson, Jesse Chavez, is going to have to start having some shoulder pain or something like that, some inflammation, and go on the injured list just to stop having to throw. Because you can't always throw your big guys. You got to throw the back end of the bullpen. But you have to trust they can get through in a single inning without giving up runs. Chavez has given up runs in 6 of his last 11 games. And that's just not good enough for a team like the Braves, who have such a slim margin for error because the offense wasn't performing until this series.
Yeah, and you can't afford to have that now heading into September. Like, 162 games long, you might have the opportunity to have a low leverage guy or a guy that can eat innings earlier in the season. But now that you're getting into the thick of it and heading into Wednesday's games, the Braves are still 6 games behind the Phillies. So even though we're saying this is a huge series coming up, it's still a long shot for the Braves to try and get back the NL East. Let's go ahead and both be clear about that. There's only 30 games left in the regular season. Yeah. 6 games in 30 games is no easy task. But if you have a strong bullpen that can make sure you don't give up a whole bunch of runs like you're having issues with at the beginning of your bullpen and Chavez and Jackson and things like that, then you have a shot. And if you don't have a shot, you at least have a strong chance of holding on to a wild card spot and maybe even potentially moving up to that second spot in the wild card. And as we've seen before in the past, just last year, it's okay to be in the wild card because you play right away and those wild card teams made the World Series. So it might not be the worst thing in the world.
Yeah, talking about that last wildcard spot, the team trying to chase down Atlanta for that last wildcard spot, the New York Mets, they go in last night in Arizona. They beat the Diamondbacks 8-3 behind what was probably a little bit too long, but a really good outing from Sean Manea. The stats are going to say otherwise. 6 2/3 innings, 4 hits, 3 runs. You're like, how did he have a good outing? He gave up 3 runs. But he gave up 2 home runs in the 7th inning, right? That's why he didn't finish the inning. It's something where leadoff home run, Lourdes Gurriel, single to Josh Bell. After getting 2 outs, Corbin Carroll hits a homer. That's the three runs right there. They throw in Reed Garrett. Reed Garrett gets out of the inning. No walks to 11 strikeouts for Manea. Twofold question here, I think. One, the combination of Sean Manea and Luis Severino, is that enough in the rotation if New York can get into the postseason to actually do something, or are they doomed to be two and barbecue no matter what they do?
I mean, I think it's an interesting rotation. It's hard for me to say that it's enough because I like to have, you know, 3 solid starters, but Manea's been great and Severino's been one of the most consistent pitchers in all the National League this year. Mm-hmm. I think Manea threw a gem in the game. Just the home runs obviously got to him at the end, as you mentioned, but I watched the majority of that. I had it on, or if I didn't have it on, it was in one of the boxes during big inning on one of my screens. So I had majority on, and just watching the way he's throwing that baseball, it was quite impressive. That offense is starting to heat up as well. They're getting hot at the right time, Lindsay. And are we surprised that we're starting to see a couple of these teams in the National League East be competitive finally? I mean, I'm not surprised. This is one of the most interesting divisions in baseball. It has been for quite some time. And now we're starting to see a team that's underperformed with the money they've spent over the last 2 years finally start to step up and get back into this playoff race. It might be a little too late. They're 3 games behind the Braves for the final wild card spot. They're obviously way behind. They're 9 games behind Philly. It might be too late, but it's going to make at least September interesting in this division.
Yeah. I do think your third playoff starter would be David Peterson. You look at, obviously his season starts late May, but month of August, 5 starts. He's 3-0 with a 1.71 ERA. Really coming into form. You've got multiple guys. The issue you have, I think I'm kind of with you. I don't think they end up making up the deficit to make the postseason, but I think the free agency here for the New York Mets is going to be really interesting. Severino's on a 1-year deal. I believe Manea may have the ability to walk. I don't quite know off the top of my head. Maybe it's an option, something like that, but it's a really interesting situation. It's a player option for 25. There you go. $13.5 million for a player option there.
It's pretty good.
What they choose to do this offseason, and we're going to do some free agent previews as we get a little bit later. And, you know, once we get out of this postseason race this playoff push, start doing some free agency previews and talk about different positions. And I do think they're one of the big suitors for Juan Soto. But I think I'm just going to be curious as to what they do from a rotation perspective and free agency. Do they give Severino a long-term deal? Do they bring Manea back on a multi-year deal? Things like that. Really curious to see there. But I think I agree with you. It's probably a little bit too late, but baseball's better when the New York Mets are competitive. It's not just the Yankees in New York. And I'm curious to see what happens here. They've got another matchup, obviously, tonight with Arizona. Really curious to see what happens. This is going to be, again, Severino versus Eduardo Rodriguez, another free agent signing that has not worked out so far for Arizona, given just 60-day IL, missed so much time with injuries for Rodriguez. We'll see what happens there. Really curious, though. Moving on to quick pitch real quick. A lot of player movement. We've got some game results. Kansas City Royals and the Guardians. The Kansas City's up 3-0 in the series. They're now tied for first place in the AL Central, making me look very smart because I said this was going to happen.
Yes, you did.
But Michael Wacha versus Tanner Bibee, I think that's going to be an incredibly interesting game. I'm going to have that game on. It's at 1:10 Eastern. That's probably the early window game to watch. You will probably, based on what we talked about, you'll probably have 2 screens up because the Pirates will have the first game, I believe it's the first game, with O'Neill Cruz in center field hosting the Cubs at 12:35. But either way, I'll be watching that until Houston Philly starts at 4:05. But I want to get to some of the player movement because we've talked about this recently, guys getting waived, stuff like that. We saw a lot of both guys coming back, guys being signed, guys going on the IL. Guys coming in first, Jason Hayward DFA'd by the Los Angeles Dodgers, has a deal with the Houston Astros. One, did you expect it to be the Astros, the team that signed Jason Hayward? And two, is Kyle Tucker dead? Like, where is Kyle Tucker at this point?
I did not expect Jason Hayward to go to the Astros. No. I expect him to go to contender. So, I mean, I guess that falls under there. But if I'm being honest with you, Lindsay, I thought he was just going to join the Braves like every other running it back teams.
If
right?
Michael Harris had to go on the injured list, I fully expected Jason. I expected to wake up on Monday morning to a message that Jason Hayward had signed them with the Braves.
You know, but him coming back there, that does throw a concern. Him going faster, to me, throws up warning signs yet again to what is going on with Kyle Tucker. Why is he not back? And it's considered a shin injury, as they mentioned, and he's finally going to get some possible running on the field, and that's his last step, according to Espada, before his rehab assignments. That just seems like they're just repeating the same record of what's going on back and forth. I am very concerned. If I'm in the Astros, I'm concerned about the health of Kyle Tucker moving into the playoffs, because if it's taking him this long just to get to a rehab assignment, you have to expect and you have to assume that when he does come back, he's not going to be the same player for the rest of the season. And if that's the case, if you're already playing this well, then maybe you just don't bring him back. I could see a possibility where they give that rehab assignment a shot and then he gets shut down for the rest of the season. I can see that happening. It's been so long since we've seen him play.
This is something, I mean, they were talking about Kyle Tucker is going to be back at the beginning of September, but that's 3 days away. He still has to do two or three games of a rehab assignment. As I understand, as of yesterday, Robert Murray kind of reported that he still has not been running the bases or sprinting at full speed. So he's not going to be back on September 1st. And it's just like at this point, it feels like you don't worry about getting him back for September. This series, notwithstanding against Philly, you've been pretty decent down the stretch. You look like you have a secure, it's not a huge lead in the AL West, but Seattle hasn't done anything. It feels like this is the safest 3.5 game lead in existence right now. And so I think I'm kind of with you. You take it slow. The goal is just to get him back in time for the postseason. Ideally, you're able to get him in a couple AAA games for rehab. Only a couple more weeks of that season. That wraps up in mid-September. So we'll see what happens there. But either way, I just have no faith that Kyle Tucker exists as a person anymore. Nobody's seen him. He's not done baseball activity. He's not run or anything on the field. I don't know if was he a figment of our imagination the entire time?
Could be lost in space. I have no idea. But the fact that he's not running at full speed either, like, what does that mean for him defensively? Does that mean he plays outfield when he returns, or is he only coming back for a bat? Because if that's the case, then where do you put Yordan Alvarez? Are you going to play him in the outfield?
You're going to have to play him in left field, same as you did when Bregman came back as DH. You had to put Yordan in left, which obviously hurts the team defense. It's not as bad at home because it's a smaller left field at home because of the Crawford boxes, but it's still not great to have Yordan in left. And so there's just more complications here. Do you get Kyle Tucker back in 2 weeks as DH? Do you wait to bring him back in 3 weeks or a month as a left fielder? A lot of stuff to kind of work through here. But talking about injuries and guys out, Nick Lodolo now on the injured list for the Reds. Hunter Green is already there. Given where Cincinnati is, right? And by where Cincinnati is, I mean they are towards the bottom of the main games out of the wild card, 63-69, below 500 here. Do you just go ahead and shut both these guys down for the season, or are you, is it important to try to get them back in the last month of the year?
Where they're sitting, I'm gonna be quick with this one. Where they're sitting, I don't think it's important to bring them back. You know what you have from Nick Lodolo and Hunter Green. You know what you got. Hunter Green was in contention for the NL Cy Young, well, making his name known after the All-Star break until he got injured. So you know what you have from them. They don't have anything else to prove moving to 2025. Shut them down for the rest of the year. Give Carson Spears more starts. Bring up Rhett Lauder. Get Rhett Lauder a start in the MLB. But no, I think you should shut them down. I really do.
Yeah. More guys. Talking about guys being shut down. Robbie Ray and Jordan Hicks both go to the IL for the Giants. Hamstring strain for Ray, shoulder strain for Hicks. Given where the Giants are, fourth place, one game over 500. They are 11 and a half games back in the division, 5.5 in the wild card. How urgent is it to get these guys back ASAP? Or is this something where you're kind of punting and going for next year?
Yeah, this might be where they finally have to punt, you know, because 5.5 games, I think this is like the inflection point of like what you're going to do at your season. Are you going to play meaningful baseball in September? But now you got Hicks, which he did move to the bullpen, so he's not in the rotation anymore. Right. And Ray finally going to the IL. I think this finally is the time where it's time to stick a fork in the San Francisco Giants. And that means that the wild card race in the National League is going to get down to just five teams. If you want to still consider the Cubs in the race, which they've won two in a row and they've done pretty hot over their last 10 games. So as of right now, I will. But you're talking about the Diamondbacks, Padres, Braves, Mets, Cubs, if you're going to leave the Giants out. And I think that's the case, because for sure the Reds are already done, as we mentioned, and the St. Louis Cardinals, it's absolutely time to stick a fork in them as well.
A guy we're not taking a fork in, to Rich Hill, the 44-year-old starter, is rejoining the Red Sox, returning to the mound. Don't really have a question here. Just think it's wild that Dick Mountain is still sitting around. And an interesting stat, the last five presidents of baseball operations for the Red Sox have all signed Rich Hill. Guys that Rich Hill played with have pitched, retired, and worked their way up to be high-level front office executives, and he is still on the field. It is wild.
Yeah, I saw something come out about pitching coach Andrew Bailey played with Rich Hill, got out of the league, and is now the pitching coach. And now he's the pitching coach to Rich Hill. So, yeah, absolutely incredible. What a career that Rich Hill's having. He's coming back 44 years old, right? That's how old he is. Yep. We're talking a guy that's closer to getting AARP memberships before anything else. But yeah, what a longevity of a career. I'm excited to see him play again. And it was fun watching him pitch. And even if he just gets a couple more starts, this is what I wanted to see, like Zach Greinke do too. I wanted to see him get like the 21 more strikeouts so he could get to 3K.
Somebody sign Zach Greinke for the final month. Come on.
I think it's 21 strikeouts he needs. Get him there.
Okay. Some of the most head-scratching moves. You have something about the Cardinals. I've got something about the White Sox. You go first.
Well, that St. Louis Cardinals went ahead and DFA'd Sean Armstrong yesterday before the game. The Cardinals have been making a lot of moves. They've sent down Jordan Walker. They sent down Nolan Gorman. Those aren't as head-scratching more than they just should have been sooner because of Nolan Gorman and strikeout rates. But the reason why it is a head-scratching move for me about Sean Armstrong is he was the guy that was traded for Dylan Carlson and Tampa Bay Rays at the trade deadline. So what that just meant for the Cardinals is they just traded Dylan Carlson, who had 3 years of control left on his contract, for Sean Armstrong for 3.5 weeks of mediocre bullpen. And that's just not going over well for fans. There's a lot of people asking for the head of John Mozeliak and everything else. And, you know, the Cardinals, they had an interesting season this year. The fact that they're even in contention this late is actually kind of surprising the way they started. But this move right here shows that they're punting. And hopefully Armstrong can get put on a contender, but it's just not a good look for the fans. They're having the lowest attendance in the history of Busch Stadium this week, Lindsay. Just not good things happening in St. Louis.
Embarrassing. Speaking of embarrassing, Texas Rangers at Chicago White Sox, Garrett Crochet on the mound. Storms approaching. They go ahead and start the game as scheduled. Garrett Crochet facing Marcus Semien. He gets 4 pitches before the game is delayed, ultimately suspended. They're going to make it up today. Dumbest move I've seen. I understand they want to find a way to limit his innings. This is an extreme way to limit a dude's innings because he's not coming back on Wednesday. He's not going to go through his entire pre-start warm-ups, get everything done, pitch 4 pitches, get shut down, and then come back the next day. He used to be a reliever. Maybe he can do that, but it just feels like an odd decision to start that game in the first place. Delay it 5. Official game time was 1 minute. Delay the game by 5. Start of the game by 5 minutes, and you probably never end up starting this. And you just have a doubleheader, and he's still available to pitch. Just seems like a really odd decision for me of doing this with Garrett Crochet. That game should have never been started. I know the White Sox are bad, but my goodness, that's just dreadful. And honestly, kind of embarrassing. It feels like they just wanted to get the concession and gate money before anything else. Like, let's get fans in here. Let's go ahead and start the game so people are doing all the stuff. And then we'll go ahead and bang it after four pitches versus calling the game a couple hours before because we knew storms were coming in and we've known all day that storms were coming in. So
yeah, they need to be better. That's just terrible.
Embarrassing decision. This has been First Pitch for Wednesday, August 28th. Tons of stuff coming up. Great games all week. So stay tuned. If you're on audio, do us a favor, leave us a 5-star review. Really does mean a ton. If you're on YouTube, subscribe to the channel, leave a comment down below, hit the notification bell so you know when we drop the next podcast. Until next time, this has been First Pitch.